Indicators and breakdowns, in particularly on the number of claims that's been furnished and finished, finalized, which you then suggest is 229,534. But upon further investigation on that number, it seems like of the 229,534, the majority, in fact, is supplier claims. The percentage breakdown between the number of claims finalized, the percentage split between supplier claims paid and victims is a ratio of about 89% supplier claims and only 28% victims. That against the background of Section 17 sub 5, which is very clear that service providers cannot claim if crash victims haven't claimed. So what is revealed here is an attempt to show a particular efficiency in terms of claim processing, but then in fact the claims that are paid are in majority 89% those of suppliers, and that not of crash victims, also in contravention of particular legal framework. That I want to put parallel to the fact that you've presented indicators in your annual report that the completion rate for personal claims, which supports the statement which I just made, has dropped from a completion rate in 2018 of 47%, this has now dropped to 28%, which has a snowball effect in support of your statement that you sit with an always increasing deficit. This administrative management supports the increase of your deficit. It does not alleviate or address this. And it also supports your presentation of a particular efficiency and a particular performance stat. If you further break this down in terms of a efficiency ratio, it reflects the following scary statistic. In that 2,435 claims, which has been handled per month, is finalized at a pace of 10.52 claims per staff member per year only. And I want to park that because I need to get to also address the legal cost. Legal cost, as you suggested, went up from 8.8 billion to over 10 billion, in fact 10.3 billion. Now, your page 75 shows that cases that have been finalized before court proceedings have decreased. In other words, there's no appetite to settle claims before any litigation. In fact, there's an appetite to dispute all claims and to appoint your lawyers, which increase the legal expenses on your side, whereas you continuously express or create the impression that it's due to legal and lawyers and legal fees, but it's because of your appointment in defense of cases that causes these cases to go to court. So there's a deliberate engagement and effort to go into litigation instead of settling the claim. It is in fact a dispute-driven process by default instead of settling the claim, which explains why the expenses on legal fees and lawyers have gone up by 24.6%. It's because you put everything in dispute and up for litigation. My next question, Chair, is around the experience that I've had in sitting in courts and listening to the quality of legal representation. Is there any effort from the Road Accident Fund to filter and to critically look at the legal representation that you employ? I've had personal experience of this, and if it's not the case, I would certainly suggest that you look at this. Apart from the fact that the majority of cases are just simply postponed for reasons that one could really just shake your head. So it's all about early settlement rather than to extend this litigation. And by quality legal representation, certainly finality can be reached far sooner and the victims can get their benefits or claim payments far sooner. I would also like to know what the current standing is around the agreements that has been made with some legal firms. I do understand that there's been a particular agreement, and what is the current standing position around that cooperation to avoid summonses and interest just increasing the whole time. Jay, the increase in deficit is certainly one that needs to be addressed. The Road Accident Fund is in serious need of intervention, and I would suggest that the increase in deficit, which we have unnecessarily experienced over the past year or 2 years, is because of the obsession by the department that RAPS is the only solution. Instead of amending the current Road Accident Fund Act, because there are numerous measures which can be employed immediately to stop the bleeding with the Road Accident Fund. Therefore, we do not see the Road Accident Benefit Scheme as the only solution. We see it as a solution, and we acknowledge it as such, but we do ask for an engagement whereby we can suggest and look at the current Roads Accident Fund Act, because we can stop the bleeding by amendments of the current fact, because certainly we cannot afford a dual system that would arise should a RAPS benefit scheme be pushed. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you so much. I just have a few small questions. In light of the fact that 24.6% of all your money that you receive goes to legal fees and compensation of professional legal people, isn't it feasible? Because if you quantify it in terms of nominal value, that's about 9 billion rand. Isn't it feasible that from the all the claims which are submitted, you put a cap, like a ceiling, in terms of what any legal firm can actually claim? Obviously, that becomes a bit of a challenge if there's a litigation, because that would also be dependent on the outcome of the court process as well, in terms of the fees which are granted, if the dispute is settled with granted with costs and all of those things. But ordinarily, where you get a situation where there is a ceiling, there is a cap of what the provision, I mean, the legal fees can be. And then also, a way which as well could assist in curbing the excessive legal fees could be, I've seen you've been running a lot of ads on TV, on radio, encouraging people to come and claim directly to RAF. You know, there are so many bogus legal firms whose only source of income is just dealing with accident claims to REF. There are other ones which are legitimate, which are doing it so well, but then there are other ones which are just bogus. The only existence is just going after you guys. The direct, of the people that came to you to claim directly, what is the success rate? How many cases have you closed successfully and within reasonable time? And the reason why I'm asking that is because it wouldn't also encourage me, God forbid, that I was to be in an accident, and then if I'm thinking of submitting a claim, if I go to you guys direct, it takes you about 2 years or 3 years, 5 years for you to close and settle a claim. But if I take the legal route, it would significantly shorten the time. So creating internal capacity, to what you have now, augmenting it, making sure that is even more than efficient than it is now. Also, one of the issues that I have a problem with RAF is, one, you know, the amount of fraud which exists internally within your own organization is shocking. If someone submits a claim today and I want to speed up that claim, I just need to call someone within, and my claim can be expedited, obviously at a certain fee, of course. Now, internally, is there any appetite whatsoever? You've noted here that you've dismissed about a few employees and all of those things, but obviously owing to LRA, Labor Relations Act, that can take quite a long time, owing to also HR processes and all of those things. But having an internal fraud and loss control unit within the organization at management level, having an executive that is appointed to specifically, or have a unit within that is meant to clean up the organization from that level, where you can hold these people accountable, where in their contracts you can, you know, put it there and say that your task is to ensure that we clean up RAF. Last feature person, as you say, that we must not go to town. There is a claimant that got a pay, and that was paid out. It's a young lady. I think she's around 22, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe this is not, I'm barking at the wrong tree here. But perhaps maybe you can take it up, or you can advise. After the payment was done, you know, I'm not jealous here. You know, as MPs, we don't get paid much. She has bought a BMW 1 Series. She's bought another car, She's living in Cape Town, living in Durban, was in Dubai. By the time she turns 25, I can guarantee you, she'll be very broke. You know, she got about in excess of 5 million rands. Is there a program that you are running internally of financial management and advising the claimants? Obviously, it will be at their own volition whether they take it or not. But can't you put stipulations? For instance, if I wanted to withdraw my pension now, I would get a huge penalty because I'm under the age of 60. I might be getting a tax penalty of about 30%, depending how much it is, 18% or 30%, depending how much. Can't you impose some of those measures? Because you find people that ordinarily they wouldn't be in a position to find a job because they were, you know, the accident was so severe, but then you find that they're squandering the funds as well. They got millions in payouts, but then once that money dries up, they become a burden to the state. They must also go again and register for social grants and assistance, you know, whereas this person had an opportunity to be self-sustainable. And lastly, last chair, the RAPS bill. You know, someone might say that I'm cold-hearted, but if someone causes an accident, right, he's a drunk driver, how many ads do we see on TV, on radio, on print that says don't drink and drive? Awareness by SANRAL, RTMC, RTIA, all of these things. I cause an accident. After causing the accident, according to the RAFs, be like, I can also get their compensation. Does that make any sense? To me, it doesn't. Perhaps maybe there's a plausible explanation, or I'm interpreting it incorrectly. Maybe it can be put into perspective here, and then I can get a correct interpretation, or I'm quoting matters out of context. Maybe you can provide me with that. Thank you, Chair.
Let me hear another voice.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also take note of the report. Chair, I would like to know about the claims that were done through the lawyers and were not received by the claimant. How do you trace them? And what are the consequences thereof? Are these claims also traceable after a period of 5 to 8 years? And how do you help claimants against fraudulent lawyers? If the lawyers have squandered the money belonging to the claimants, how do you trace that money if the lawyers has passed on? And finally, you talked about the levy, that you get levy from the fuel that is sold to the taxpayer. Are you not getting anything from the road licenses that are paid by the taxpayers to the government? Thank you.
Let's get the lady now.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the report. One of the Auditor General's findings was your inability to collect monies owed, amongst others. Now, in your presentation, you are only giving us problems. You are not coming out with solutions. And it will be interesting to, I've looked at your number of employees, it's 2,776. And it will be interesting to find out how much are the salaries that you are paid and how much are the bonuses. A bonus, it's not a right. We need to look at saving costs here. And given your situation, you find yourselves in, what cost-saving measures have you put in place? And then if you look at the fraud cases, right, it would be also interesting to see the total amount involved and how much you have managed to recover. Lastly, do you have any consultants? And if you do, how much is spent on consultants? Thank you.
Let's get the male voice.
Thank you, Chair. You are promoting direct claims. What is the average value of a direct claim? How many of these claims prescribe? And how would the victim know if the amount offered is reasonable? Isn't the RAF playing judge and jury with the victim's lives? Then my second question is, what have you done to limit the RAF's exposure to cost, having regard to Practice Directive 2 and the most recent directive implemented in the North and South Gauteng High Courts? See key mitigation implemented in 2018-29 on page 120. Thank you.
Let's hear a lady's voice.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mine is just the question for clarity. I would like to be clarified
how long does it take for you to attend to the claims? If we submit, I submit a claim, now how long does it take? I'm raising this because there are people who are still saying we have submitted and it's years and years passing, they haven't got their claims. So I just want to check on that. Thank you. And also, when you were introducing yourself, you indicated that the CEO is acting and the CFO is acting. When is that going to end? Wherein we don't have acting, but we have those positions filled. Thanks.
Any taker, male voice? Thank you. Male voice?
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for the presentation. You're working under very difficult circumstances. You're a company that has no liquidity. You're actually bankrupt in all essence. So, but you're also an entity that we can't live without, to be honest, because people get maimed and killed on our roads every day. So we must find a way to fund you better, or to give you, we must throw a checkbook at you at this stage just to help you to get out of your troubles. But that's not going to happen very soon, I can tell you that. One of the things that we maybe we must look in the future is maybe to limit the amount of fees that a lawyer can charge regarding RAF claims. Make it a flat rate. It's not uncommon to do that. And I think we must speak to the people in the law society to make it 500 rand or something like that. They're doing a public service. They should do it for free, actually, not charge us millions to do a job. That's a social service to the people of South Africa, because they're actually servicing the poor black people of South Africa and getting extremely rich from it. I would like to know the RAF does road shows on promoting direct claims. Since the inception of the road show until in the current financial year that we are discussing, how many direct claims resulted from this promotion of direct claims on your roadshow? Then I have that will be my last question, Chair. I was covered by the others. Thank you.
Chair and your team, this is your opportunity to respond. Let me also ask you not to go to town and come back.
Thanks so much, Chair. I think we are of the opinion that the current system that we have can also push in a few efficiencies, as it were. We are not only relying on the RAPs, but we think that there are efficiencies we can deal with in the current dispensation. I agree with you that the issue around claims finalized, we have got a lot of claims that are supplier claims. Now, we have also looked at the issues of the victims themselves, and the difficulty with it, as you say, is the fact that some of these cases need to be defended. Now, when you want to see the efficiency of whether the system of defending claims works, you need to see where people were proposing that these claims must be settled to their value, and then after going to court, how much the court then says is where you need to settle. That's the only way you're going to see whether this thing is done properly. The reality is that this is a delict gate system where someone must be found to be fault on that, and consequently it involves lawyers. If you had just a normal insurance, someone would know if I'm hurt like this, this is the exact amount I must get, and the claim must go there without people necessarily going to court. So that creates a problem for us, and it's something that we need to resolve. Now, the reality is that RAF does not enjoy going to court, but the reality is if we don't, we'll end up settling higher than where we're supposed to settle. And that's the balance that we need to put into the system in that. So the block settlement that we have with some legal firms are standing arrangements that we still have. We do talk to lawyers and want to do that. And this is because we also go to court and we've got court orders that we must pay. And it says in 14 days. The reality is that in 14 days, RAF does not have that money. And there's a backlog. So we have decided since that we, when we go to court, we will plead for a longer payment period. But here is the other reality, and I want to bind this with paying people lump sums. Lawyers are attracted by these lump sums. I suspect that if you don't have lump sums, you're not going to have a lot of them in the system. So you give someone 5 million. We have got a case here of school children that when they got hurt, I think someone was 10 and now they're 22. The money has run out a long time ago. The reality is that loss of income or loss of support does not need lump sum. There's no way if your father was going to take care of you, we'll give you a lump sum up front and do that. So probably, lest we be accused of a nanny state where we want to babysit people, but the reality is that you give people money, it depends on them, on whether they're going to pay that money prudently or not. So it might just be important that we keep that money and then we pay it over a period of time. And something that we think you can put into the system and it will work. And therefore, I don't think that RAPS is the only solution. We don't say that RAPS is the only solution. RAPS is part of the solution. The first solution is, of course, to deal with road safety issues. We need to deal with the source rather than then deal with the symptoms. I think that's one thing that we needed to do. Now, we also engage in this, and you'll see it. I mean, we have seen where doctors have also seen this fund as where they can get all their money. And you see most of these repudiated claims are now coming from doctors. So we have been dealing with a fraternity of lawyers, but now we're also dealing with doctors that have got fraudulent claims. We want to have to go and reopen some of these claims that we've paid in the past. As I said, we have got an issue. We have picked up that there are fraudulent court orders. So a judge says, I've never signed such a court order, but the court order is there. And our accounts are then attached on that basis. We had a meeting with the NPA, and we had a meeting with the Hawks, together with the Asset Forfeiture Unit. You will see our work in the recent, in November and December, we'll be doing a lot of that work, because we need to get the money back to RAF where it belongs. Now, Honorable Mabena, the issue around the lawyers as well. I mean, we looked at the model. One of the models we are looking at is the model of the Legal Aid Board. They have insourced the lawyers. They are doing much better than they used to do. People knew that if you had no money for legal aid, usually your case was not a very strong case, because the kind of lawyer you would get would be the kind of lawyer that does not apply their minds to that. So they decided, probably about 6-7 years ago, to insource this. They do 96% of their work is insourced lawyers. They deal with their own lawyers. probably we must start to do that. It's something that we are looking at as the Road Accident Fund. We are in this space. And of course, I mean, the other issue is claims handling, the way we handle our claims internally. Is it efficient? We can do much, much better. We can do much, much better. What we have also picked up is that the lawyers have got a way of managing this thing. For instance, they know we have got a backlog in Main Lane. And because the RAF Act allows them to submit this thing everywhere, they have decided to target Main Lane as well. Cape Town lawyers will submit their claims in Main Lane, where the backlog is, so that you reach the 120 days, then they can hit you with summons. So we have seen that. So we are going to work. We are working very closely with the judiciary on this matter. Because our view is that a lot has changed in the legal fraternity. The judiciary has opened. There's a high court in Polokwane, there's a high court in Nelspruit, there's a high court in Mahikeng, and there are high courts everywhere else. There's no need of why people are submitting everything in Pretoria. So we are going to open those as our fully fleshed regional offices or provincial offices, whichever you want to say, and people must submit there. We're going to manage that because they want to buy time so that they can issue summons. So some of the things we could have settled before you issue summons, but we have not even captured them because there's a backlog. So we are dealing with those matters. Direct claims. I mean, we hear that there is a statement that was issued by certain lawyers about direct claims and the issue around whether this thing is legal or not and all that. I mean, you can represent yourself. There's no one who can force you to represent people. We think that if we manage the system in such a way that it's more predictable, right, at least to the extent that people can know that going to a lawyer, not going to a lawyer, there's no much difference. We can work on that. So we're working on that. We're working with a team of lawyers. We're also working with a team of medical practitioners to see what we can do in that regard. And as I said, we want to kill this thing of lump sum. That's a fact. That one we are not going to move away from. It's something that must come into the system, and we think that it's something that the Portfolio Committee should also help us with as we move forward. The amount of fraud. We have got a fraud investigation division. We are now finalizing work that we must be working with the anti-corruption task team to place some of them at the Road Accident Fund. I mean, probably we need more of this work because we have had cases that have been dragged for a long time and they are not moving. But equally, we need to ensure that once we have picked up an issue of fraud, something happens to it. I mean, we have not followed up to the extent possible. But we also are victims of our own silence. So when RAF is defrauded, there's no noise. When we make one small mistake, it is mountain out of the moon. We need to do that. And that's what I've been saying to the team, that we need to sit, and when these things happen, like we know that there has been an asset forfeiture exercise on a couple of lawyers, but we've been too quiet. No one knows about it, but it's the reality. People have been defrauded, a lot of them, by lawyers who have not paid over the monies, and we are quiet about it. Some lawyers have even moved to Australia after defrauding the RAF in a big way. And nothing happens to those people. So we just need to make sure that when we do this and the work that we do on this fraud is dealt with. The issue around caps, of course, I mean, must be looked at. The reality is that there is no insurance scheme that has got infinity as a number, depending on how good a lawyer you have or how good a doctor you have. There's no system that works like that. And therefore, we might have to get issues of caps. And that's why, for us, it's important. That's why I'm saying RAPs can't be the only solution. I think there are other things that we can do in the current legislation to ensure that those things happen in the way. And I think this also goes to the claims that I've gone through lawyers. but were not received by claimants. The difficulty is that the relationship there is quite a private relationship. We do work with the law enforcement agencies when those cases are open. So it's better if people open the case, and then we can follow up with law enforcement agencies to say, well, we have paid this much. We have the information about who we paid, how much we paid to this person. So it's something that we must work with society in general, and I mean our communities in educating them. Part of the rough on the road is not only to educate those who are claimants currently, but people who have been claimants but some things have not come. And we're picking it up when we do rough on the road. Someone says, well, I've not been paid. They come with the ID number. We find we've paid this person. So we do follow up on those matters. The issue about solutions. We have solutions that we are going to propose as we go forward, but there are solutions that are there. Others are internal within ourselves, but others we think, as I say, that the portfolio committee can help us in dealing with this. Are there cost-saving measures? Yes, there are cost-saving measures that we implement in the RAF. The difficulty is that when you don't have money, whether it's cost-saving or not, we try to cut it to the bare minimum and do what we want to do. Yes, we do have consultants, as it were. Most of these consultants are in the area of children's services, medical as well, and lawyers. As I said, some of these things, our views, that must be insourced, and we're going to work on how we want to insource some of those things. And yes, we do promote direct claims because we believe that with direct claims there is no lawyer that is involved. And as I said, we need to balance that with the fact that people must know that even if it's direct claims, they are not worse off, so to say. So it's something that we're working on. The issue of the practice directive, I must start, Chair, by saying the matter is sub judice. We are in court. I think the company is Hertnell and Associates or something, and other people. The judiciary have passed two directives. We support those directives. For obvious reasons, we need efficiencies in the court system. But the other people are claiming that this will not be in the best interest and that and that. We believe that what we have worked, the judiciary have said, is something that is doable. We in the RAF are working on that and seeing. We have put in our papers in defense as well, because we are respondent in that matter. So like I said, it's sub judice. It's not something we can talk about. We believe that something must be done. As I'm saying, there are fraudulent court orders. Sometimes people just settle matters just at the step of the court, and that wastes the judiciary time. So they want us to do certain things before we actually go to court. And we agree that that must happen. And for us, it's important that we support each other as we move forward to that. And we would need the support of the portfolio committee on that. How long does it take to attend to a claim? It just depends. I mean, sometimes they are represented claims. Sometimes we can agree quickly on matters. Sometimes we don't. But the difficulty with this current system is that if it's a represented claim, firstly, the people would actually go and get their own doctors to do this work. And then it comes back to us. And then we don't agree. Then we hire our own specialists. And then they do the work. And then somewhere they agree, sometimes they don't agree. Then we must go and represent all that in court, and then the decision must be taken. And if not, there are other issues. There's just a lot of things that we have got to jump, the hoops we have got to jump to get to where we want to be. And I think some of the things, we can have a common panel where everyone can go. We can even agree on the pricing of those things. And I think for us, we want to pay as soon as possible, but we also don't want to be paying what is more than what we are supposed to pay. Equally, I don't think that the claimant wants to be compensated less than what they want. So it's that balance, as I said, that we need to do. I'm going to leave the issue of the acting CEO and the CFO to the chair, I can't speak about myself and other things, so he'll talk to that. So, Honorable McDonald, the issue is that, yes, we live in difficult circumstances because of the bankrupt nature of what we do. We, as I said, it's something that we would want, we would welcome very much the limits on all what we do. Medical aid has got rates. Everybody has got a rate. If you go to, let's just say, you legal-wise, for instance, they will tell you that your matter is up to this much, and they will say to the lawyer, this is how much you get. So it's not something new. Something that we must, we will welcome, and we will do that. I think we'll give you the number. We'll have to go and do the numbers if the colleagues agree, and we can come back, Chair, within 7 days on the number of people that we have helped since inception using Rough on the Road and the direct claims, as it were. So I don't know if you have answered all the questions, but I tried to touch on all of them. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Chairperson, I just want maybe to address slightly the matter of how a person can know or verify the fairness of an offer that that's made to them. I think that there was a question like that, if I'm... Yeah. Okay, so all these are actuarial calculations based on the information that we receive from claimants. When we are currently dealing with a case where a claimant feels, I am not being paid enough. My child is not going to get enough. Purely because she knows, although she is I don't know if this is insulting, but she's actually not the wife to the deceased. She has a child with the deceased. And she was receiving a maintenance grant. And that gets included in the actuarial calculations. And then an amount was offered to her. And the children of the deceased surely did not get the same amount, and she felt very aggrieved. So if you ask the question of the fairness of the value that a claimant should receive, I can only say that it depends on what the actuarial calculations are and what the data is that is used to calculate the amount that should be given to the claimant. Safe to say that it can never be enough. We will always want some more. If we can help it, we will always want some more. Okay, on the issue of the acting positions, the board of the Road Accident Fund has gone through a process of advertising, shortlisting, interviewing, and finally recommending candidates to the minister. And as we speak, those names are with the minister. But in the meantime, we engaged with the department, and we were offered the services of Mr. Letswalo to be acting up until the time that the minister has made up his mind, because it is his responsibility to appoint the CEO. The board can just recommend candidates to him. So we are waiting for the minister to respond to that, and we don't know when he will do that. The chief financial officer, since the position was vacant and it was occupied by Mr. Songa Elwa here, we have gone through a process, the office of the CEO has gone through a process of advertising and the interviews. I think they did not find a right candidate. So it still has to be done. And I must say that sometimes we feel very much under pressure to appoint, but it still remains the duty of the organization to find a suitable candidate. Thank you, Chair.
Madam, not yet you, but I was listening attentively. There is a question that was asked on salaries and bonuses.
May I comment on that through the chair? I think the question was more on cost saving measures. We do have an instruction note from National Treasury that talks on cost savings measures. I was requesting that I elected last time we were here, we responded within 7 days with the questions. So if that would be accepted as well, I've taken notes of it, we'll respond in 7 days' time and give more details as to what measures are we taking to contain our costs. And there's more other questions that are in there. For example, the other one is on fuel levy, for example. Is fuel levy the only source of income that we have at RAF? The answer is yes, that's the only source of income. There's a question of inability to collect our debts. I was saying I request that we respond in 7 days' time. It will be more precise. Thank you.
Now, I was saying you should respond by midday on Monday because we must finalize our report. Okay. All right. I'm told lawyers are here also. So as you speak, they are here. Because we do not hide anything. Let's thank you for your presentation, Chairperson, and your team. Because I was not there when you came, I take it is for the first time, and I'm not going to ask many questions because I'm seeing you for the first time. But I think as you are alluding that you should have benchmarks. If you are going to be depending on actuaries, then there's chaos. You'll have these cases you're talking about, Chair, because now you depend on somebody and you'll be calling upon lawyers. There's a space for people to play and take money out of this fund. So our wish is for you to close that avenue so that we don't blame people. Where we can assist you in terms of legislation, we now have a bill, let's close. One honourable member is saying lawyers are on both sides, and we have acknowledged that. And as I'm seated here, somebody is dead in the family or injured, and somebody who has not been affected at all is the one that is benefiting in terms of this fund. It does not make sense. It absolutely does not qualify to be seen as the fund that is looking upon people who are injured and people who passed away on the road accident, because they are not the actual beneficiaries. The people who have knowledge, people in terms of medicine and so forth, are the people who benefit from both sides. I think one honorable member said, let's look at ways we can actually cap this and ensure that we can pay on time. But you are raising a very important fact that we should actually ensure that our roads are safe. I've never, maybe it's a no, but where is our moral standard? Where we can budget for the death of other people and make it an issue? People are in court, this and this, because other people are dead. And it's a norm, it's a norm. We must get our money, go to court, the court must say yes or no. When other people have lost their families, and we think this is normal, it should be what it is in this country. There are representatives of the Department of Transport here. I think we must take that matter up, go back and correct the anomalies. Where we you need our help, we'll help you. And try and clean the whole scheme as much as we can do and as fast as we can do. If somebody's dead and the family can't bury them and all these issues, and you take a year before you can release their fund, what purpose is it serving? I mean, after a year, Honorable Mapena was saying people are going to buy BMWs and so forth and so on, which is what we should actually sit down as legislatures and see how to deal with that issue. But paying after a year, 2 years, 3 years, what message are you sending? You're saying there should be no difference between a direct application and somebody who applied through the lawyer. There must be a difference. If you apply through a lawyer, it means you must pay a lawyer part of what you're going to get. But if you apply directly, it means you must get all your money as it is. That is what will actually encourage our people to do a direct application. In fact, a fund from government must be able to do those things. It must be able to do. We will take you from members who understand this thing properly and your good sense, but a lot has to be done. I think I've toned it down because it's for the first time we see you. Otherwise, I would have a lot to say. But thank you for putting everything on the table. Go and deal with these anomalies. If there are people who must be paid in order for them to process claims of other people, when money is there, it's actually not the right thing. It's an image of you guys and the image of the government that is at play. And I think let's try and correct that. We agree with you. In source, why are you waiting? You don't need to come to us and ask. Go and in-source tomorrow. If that is going to save money, go and do it. We will support that endeavor. Go and stop the bleeding, as one member says, as put it. And, I think that's what we wanted to say to you. We were very tough yesterday on one of the entities, which is not very far from where you are. You must actually thank the spirit that prevails today. It was not there yesterday. So today people are fine, and so you are lucky. But let's go back and do our work. Otherwise, we are here to support the people of South Africa. Because the Law Society is here. Let me make this call. These are the people we rely on because of their knowledge of law. Let them assist the ordinary men and women in the street. So if I do something here in South Africa, I can go to Australia and I'm free. Is that the correct interpretation? That anybody who has skipped the country, they can't be touched when they have defrauded the country to that level? Must we accept this thing? I don't think so. Maybe we should agree that that has to be followed up. Anybody who defrauds the country must be followed up. It should be not an issue that somebody has gone to Australia. When they are guilty, we can't. Again, we have bilaterals and we have diplomatic ties and with Australia. We have. So we must go and get our friend to come back home and answer. And when they want to go, they must go when they are free. Otherwise, we will be a banana republic country where people will defraud us and go to Zimbabwe. They just go over the river and no, we mustn't do that. So thank you very much. We shall see you next year. No. Yeah, we may see you next year. So you must go and enjoy your Christmas while you are dealing with these other issues, because when you come back, I think we'll have a thorough discussion. We really want to have that discussion with you. I think one member said it. We will have a proper meeting where you are not many and discuss these issues, because these are pertinent issues that we must correct. Thank you very much. Everybody is liberated.
Thank you, Chair.